Blog Talk Radio.
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
I love you so badly, I could...
They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap,
a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Ringside Wrap. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by the legendary Les Thatcher, and it is Wednesday, October 3rd, 2012, 8 p.m. here on the East Coast, and we apologize for not being with you last week. Had some things pop up, but Mr. Olympia Jerry Stubbs is rescheduled for next week. But for the next hour, Les and I are going to be here with you with no breaks, so which is actually kind of nice, and just going to plow through and talk about what's been going on. But Les, how are you, sir?
I'm better, Mike. If I start coughing on you a little bit, I'll cover the phone and excuse myself a moment. But last week, I was at the point where I was on these coughing jags for like a minute and a half or 2 minutes to where my lungs hurt, for God's sakes. So I wasn't, wouldn't have been the greatest conversationalist, I don't think. But I'm better. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, it still would have been better than when Rich used to be on joining us. So,
now, Les, well, I got the goods on our boy Rich. You know, I hadn't talked to Ken Lucas this past weekend for 5 minutes until he said, "I thought I was going to be on your radio show." So what? He said, "Well, he never called me back." I said, "Really?"
Wait, let me get this straight. Rich Tate, big time, Ken Lucas?
I guess. I don't know.
Oh, man. See, well, now, I knew Brutal Bob Evans should have smacked Rich around when he saw him.
Well, you know, when you're part of the show, it's one thing, and then as you move up and become executive producer and CEO and all that stuff, it's...
And I heard that Bob Evans music playing in the background, too, there, but... Actually, you know, it should say this about Bob, too. His Iron Week has been announced in full now. And I guess for those people who, you know, didn't get a chance to hear him on the show, he's going to wrestle 7 one-hour Ironman matches. Now, he did this a couple years ago with guys like Mike Bennett and wrestled in 6 of them. This time it's going to be 7, and the names are Adam Cole, Delirious, Julian Starr, Grizzly Redwood, Steve Corino, Vinny Marsiglia, and Mike Mondo now being the last one. And, you know, I know this is big for Bob to do. It really is. But I tell you what, I think people are going to be surprised with Grizzly Redwood and Steve Corino and Mike Mondo, too, although I think people know Mondo can go that long. But it's going to be a great experience for Adam Cole. And Redwood and Corino, I think, are going to be 2 really cool matches. So kudos to Bob for being able to schedule this.
Good for him to be able to go that kind of time. That's, I mean, in this day and age, truthfully, that's unusual. And it's not that the athletes aren't capable. It's just they set the pace too hard at the front, you know, to blow. They'll blow out in that before that 60. But pacing themselves right, they could do that as well. And then when you realize, this is a great, I think, a great feat for this day and age. But if you realize 40 years ago, the NWA World Champion probably did this with some regularity.
Oh yeah, and with the hampering of jet lag, of opponents that he didn't know, of opponents that weren't of caliber to go 60 minutes. It really, you know, when you stop and think in hindsight, I mean, you know, Jack Briscoe admitted it. You know, he was, you know, I think it was 2 years, 3 years away, and he was done. He was absolutely done. Other guys thrived in it, you know, Dory Funk Jr. and guys for longer and enjoyed it longer. But that it is amazing in hindsight to think about 300 days a year and just, again, the amount of different people that you had to face as that champion with all of that wear. Again, also at a time where amenities and flights and things like that weren't at the level they are now. It is an incredible thing to look back on.
Well, it was when talent was the premium. You know, when that was the important thing, honestly. I mean, not that, you know, being able to project yourself in an interview or a promo wasn't, or, you know, the way you present yourself in the ring, but ultimately there were some damn tremendous performers, Mike, years ago that couldn't get a job today simply because they didn't have that look. But yet, psychologically, they'd go out there and tear it up. You know, I mean, they knew when it was a case of, you know, understanding the psychology and feeling the people. And, you know, not that it's a new concept or an amazing concept, but, I mean, there were guys then that couldn't even get work today because they didn't, you know, they don't meet the physical qualifications.
You know, guys rise to the top. You think of a guy, how he looked like Dusty Rhodes, where, you know, imagine what he would be if he came along today. And you know, yes, the cream always rises to the top. And Dusty, I mean, Dusty wasn't he wasn't Briscoe or Funk going 60 minutes, but he could go 60 minutes. And the psychology and the things he was able to do and the feuds he was able to have, he would not get that chance today.
No.
Just wouldn't.
But, you know, let me say, too, that part of going 60 or whatever, excuse me, Mike, part of going 60 or whatever, in part is understand how to pace yourself and get the most out of doing as little as you can get. When I say this, I don't mean it in a manner of being lazy, right? But not only pacing yourself, but using a minimum of things to get the job done and make it meaningful. And, the, you know, the art's fading away. Excuse me. And Monday night was one of the worst I've seen. And I think CM Punk, and if you want to cover it in one sentence, CM Punk is right. Creative doesn't have a clue.
It's a 2.5 rating, I think it was. Everybody knew this. I mean, everybody knew that this show was going to be the shits going in because the show just has been. You can blame it on people, you know, the Bears, Cowboys, and yes, that is a big deal. And no John Cena, yeah, that is a big deal. And I know that'll be the only thing WWE points to and says, God damn it, John Cena wasn't on there. That's the reason why. No, the reason why is your show sucks. Again, even for the average TV viewer, I mean, your hardcores are the only ones that are watching this right now. I mean, all those people that you play to, or that WWE at least plays to, they're not even watching it.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's just everything was 23 minutes to finally make a tag match with a cast of thousands, which really I didn't see any value to. And then AJ has her guidance counselor or whatever the hell it was. That was, who cared? The debate was just horrible. I don't know if there was anything that was just earth-shattering. And just, you know, and the thing of it is, these people are trying. They're not good actors. You know, and it's just, in filling a time that way, it's just, you know. And I guess they're done with Big Matt Bloom, since he did the job for Ryback. And,
oh, yeah. That was ridiculous.
Brodus Clay, obviously, the shine's gone off of that, Which, but you know, the other thing is this tag team tournament. If you look at it, for the most part, it's almost like you have to have more losses than you have wins to qualify.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, how telling is it that how much you really want those tag team belts when you ask Santino to be your partner?
Yes. Yes, the man who's lost to Antonio Cesaro 9 million times in a row, and that's just looking at it from the fact that, you know, if you don't look at Santino as pure comedy, and obviously you do, but, I mean, even if that wasn't the case, he always loses. How does this make any sense? It doesn't.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're trying, you know, the Woo kid, they're trying to rejuvenate him, and, you know, he has a cult following to a certain degree, which is fine, but... Again, you're not going to put him as – I mean, he is not – Punk was the guy that could have carried the ball if you know, if Cena, you know, something happened with John is out for any really length of time. And he probably should be in this case, probably out longer than he's going to be. But anyway, they don't have anybody. And, you know, some of these things are funny and – goofy and whatever, but you roll them all together, they're not going to draw you buy rate at a pay-per-view or a house. I mean,
now,
go ahead.
And this, and the lack of foresight too, because I mean, you said that I don't know how long it's been now since Zack Ryder has been in play here, but I mean, ever since that time where people were clamoring to see him in the main event, and most people. Where the brain said, no, well, stop and think about this. No, you don't do that. One of the things that you said was, you know, you got to beat him up, beat him. And I, you know, kind of was of the, make him the really super poor man's version of Ricky Morton. But, you know, if you would have done that at the time and gave him some seasoning and gave him some experience and obviously had him lose all the time, but then build him up slowly and make somebody actually get behind him and believe in him, by this point, you would have had a guy. But they don't think far enough ahead to think about that.
Here's part of it, too, Mike. When you were saying, yes, you know, we need 20 Ricky Mortons if we can find them, and young, you know, vital young men, but we don't have them. But the thing with Morton is he knew how, you know, the psychology of thing. And that's the thing. This guy doesn't really, because he's that generation that, you know, it's all about the frills, the hand signals and the costuming and the catchphrase and that sort of thing. And he honestly seems talented, you know, in terms of being a good athlete. But again, they set the bar with him when they started beating him like a drum. And they're not going to change that, you know, and it's just... And the craziest thing is, in this whole tournament thing, the actual champions are the only two people that kind of stick out to you as being top guys. Right?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, everybody else is just a mid-carder or somebody you've seen lose, 12 times and, 12 different people. So it's depressing, honestly. I'm thinking, my God, it's just...
Well, what do you think about Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow? Now, obviously, Sandow, what do you feel about Sandow just in general? And is teaming with Cody, if they can actually do something with that, and they actually are in a feud with Daniel Bryan and Kane, is that the best thing that could happen to Sandow, with it being just anywhere near those other three?
Yeah, I'm kind of mixed on him, Mike. His shtick is kind of entertaining. His work is okay. He's not a great worker. So I'm not sure. I mean, you know, for this team thing to work out, I don't know. It's probably going to be the best thing he's going to get. I mean, when I say that, I just don't see him being pushed straight to the top in any way, shape, or form. You know, he's...
No, and out there they'll probably go with him quicker, but at least, I guess for his sake right now, because, again, unfortunately for Matt Bloom, who I don't know. I thought I'm not going to say they sandbagged him, but his debut after WrestleMania, when you had Brock Lesnar, when you had other things going on and you wanted to roll out monsters that did not make him look special, they gave him Alex Riley in a match that went on way too long. and just did not do him any, you know, benefits. And, you know, he had a really, I thought, a good, stiff, you know, hard match with Sheamus a couple weeks ago. But that's been pretty much it. And obviously for his sake and the money, I really hope that, you know, he continues to have a WWE contract. But for him creatively, if this is what it's going to be, I'm not sure how much money he was making in New Japan, but you know what? He was damn good over there. Let him go back.
Well, yeah, it's well, you know, they honestly don't know they don't know how to use wrestling talent in a form that does them any good. You know, they don't use them as wrestlers or don't understand whether, well, it's not even a case of whether they do or don't understand. There are people there that do understand. But, you know, but they're doing this anyway. It's, you know, they're fighting against themselves, I think, and it's to a certain degree. Does that make sense, what I'm saying? It's,
oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, they're so set on not being wrestling that, you know, it's, you know, they're working so hard in the other direction that's really, I think, taken away from, and the extra hour, too. You know, guys, there's things you could really use that extra hour for if you're going to, and it wouldn't be for any of the stuff that I saw Monday night.
No.
You know, they could do video packages on upcoming stars. That piece
Let me throw this at you real quick, just because I have it on here in the background, the WWE Main Event Show, which is another hour that they did not need, but if Ion's going to give them money, fine. On the Ion Network is on right now, and they did spend the first about 15 minutes. They were video packages on Sheamus and CM Punk, and obviously I couldn't hear them, but they were using footage from CM Punk that they acquired from, I would assume, IWA Mid-South or whatever that was, as well as in Florida and Ohio Valley when he was there as well. It looked like they had a lot of commentary by different guys, you know, talking about them. So, you know, I'm thinking as this is going on, I'm talking to you, why is this not on the first hour on Monday?
I don't know. Well, you know, you know, I wouldn't just do 1 hour. I would just, you know, spread these video packages out throughout the show. But, yeah, and it's been a couple of years ago, obviously, because it was Jeff Hardy. But they were doing a WWE magazine cover, and they were doing it on a blue screen where he was, like, flying, right? And but anyway, they went behind the scenes and showed him doing this, you know, and him saying, "Oh, this is harder than wrestling," you know, and that's what. But still, it was of interest, you know, it was human interest, like People Magazine or something along those lines. They could do stuff like that. There's guys on that roster, I'm sure, that have hobbies or do unique things, you know, when they're away from the business. That would be give them more depth of character, you know, people, if they happen to have the same hobby as somebody that happens to be a fan of theirs, then it kind of solidifies the thing a little more. But I mean, there's a lot of things could be done, but trying to turn this into a stupid soap opera is not one of them. It's just not.
No, that's one thing I didn't get a chance, obviously, since we weren't here last week, to ask you about was the passing of Don Fields. Don Hatfield died about 2 weeks ago at the age of 80.
84, wasn't he?
Was he 84? Okay, I thought it was
80. 82, 84, I'm not sure. Yeah, Don was a good guy. That was, you know, the last of the Fields. Don and Bobby and Lee. Lee's been gone the longest. Bobby just passed away last year. And Don has been in a home, gosh, I'm going to guess a couple years anyway now, because he hasn't been able to get to the reunion. And Florence is his widow, bless her heart. Her cancer is reoccurring again, I believe. And for this to be for the third time. But they, you know, they ran that Gulf Coast for a long time. Don wasn't – when I first – when we first went in there in 66, 67, Don wasn't wrestling at the time. He was just working in the office. Bobby was wrestling. Lee, just a little bit. But, yeah, that's the last of the family. But you're right, originally the Hatfields from Oklahoma. Their father, Speedy, married one of the Welch.
Bonnie Welch.
Yeah. And anyway, Speedy refereed Speedy Hatfield. But anyway, yeah, it was. I like working the territory. Well, at one point when we first went down there in '66, they actually had Louisiana from Natchez, Mississippi, south, down along the Gulf Coast before Watts, spread out and opened that whole thing up. But that was. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say because I. Let me kind of read this off because I kind of scribbled this down when I was talking to Meltzer when I heard about his passing, and I wanted to bring it up on the show I did with him a couple weeks ago. But tell me, you know, after I read this, where I'm far off or anything like that, because it's just, you know, that whole Fuller Welch Golden Clan is it's an amazing story that I'm surprised people don't talk about more. There's not more stories about, but. Leroy McGirt, he had Oklahoma and Arkansas, Louisiana, and parts of Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida, and the Florida were running.
I don't know that they ran as far into Florida, did they?
Okay, I wasn't sure if he owned a piece of that at the time and then sold it off or how that worked.
I don't know either, but I didn't know that he ran. I don't think they ever ran into Florida. I think I don't know if they ever got. Past any further east than New Orleans, really.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they ever came into Mobile or Dothan or any of the Panama City or any of those towns along the coast over there.
Okay, that's. I wasn't sure if McGurk had sold that to Roy Welch or if that was how exactly that worked.
Lord knows, Mike. Probably nobody
oh,
knows
yeah.
for sure.
Well, and it's kind of, damn it, yeah, it's too bad, because I know Mike Norris on this site has written, you know, extensively about it, and you, you know, working, even though it was more Knoxville, I mean, it's just, it surprises me that, because again, this is a family that, you know, when it comes to the Fullers that, you know, booked for Eddie Graham, and they ran the Caribbean at a time, and Australia at a time, and they have, you know, so much history, but there's not so much history spoken about them.
Yeah, I couldn't give you a valid reason why. You're right, the family was Jack, Herb, Roy, and Lester. And Buddy Fuller, or Welch, if you will, is the son of Roy. And Lester's two sons, Roy Lee and Jack, were wrestlers. And then Speedy married Buddy's sister, or one of the. I'm sorry, no, he didn't. He married his sister. Golden married one of the Welch girls. And then Jimmy Golden was a wrestler. Bill was promoter. And the beat goes on.
Yeah, it's Phil Goldman, Buddy Carson, and Shane Field. It's just absolutely amazing. I mean, that tree is incredible. You know, booking wise, since that doesn't get talked about, I guess a whole heck of a lot. I know, well, unless you're Gary Hart, who didn't much care for their booking style and things like that. But as bookers, how were the Fullers? Because obviously, you know, either and we'll take you know. Colonel Parker, their Buddy Fuller out of the mix.
Well, you know, I don't know. Robert was young.
Robert Fuller, I'm sorry.
When Ronald first bought that territory, Nelson Royal and I helped him book it from the get-go. Then Joe Hamilton came in, and he booked. And then when Robert came in, it was pretty much the table was set. I guess is the best way to say it. Because he never had that kind of success anywhere else. So So Ronald was, you know, when we when he bought that territory, the idea was to put more wrestling in, which we did, and to get more serious about it, which was one of the reasons that he wanted to get rid of Jim Hess, who had been, you know, was a local talk show host and DJ and nice guy, but, you know, it was kind of, a warp your head off hold and, you know, just kind of funny. So anyway, it wasn't like a personal issue. But anyway, so, you know, Ron wanted to do it more seriously, and we did, and it paid off, obviously. The territory was red hot. And what Robert, you know, Ronald had ideas, and like I say, he and Nelson and I would sit and kick those, you know, ideas around, and then Jody came in, and he helped book for a while, and then Robert took it, and he was okay, but I don't think he was a great booker. And part of it was he hadn't matured at that point in time. He was still having too much fun.
But they big fish. I mean, obviously, Ron Fuller, size-wise, was a huge fish. But, you know, how were they in their neck of the woods? I mean, wasn't Von Erich like it was in Dallas or anything like that. But how big were the, because of that extended family and the name and, you know, tie-ins with the Hatfields on one side of the family and the whole nine yards, what were they look like?
Well, Ronald was a serious business person of the two, and Robert was just a screw-off. I mean, when I say it, I don't mean that to be insulting, but, you know, Robert just going through life having a good time and having to be a member of the family. But they got – I mean, Ronald started as a heel in Knoxville and then finally turned babyface. And but he was over, more so than Robert, I think. But Ronald, you know, I always, you know, Ronald and I, I'm godfather to his youngest son. And, Buddy booked or helped book several places, Atlanta, Tampa, I think Nashville, Memphis, where the hell ever, I don't know. But I never actually worked directly for him, so I couldn't tell you good, bad, or indifferent. You know, and Roy Welch, that was the owner with Goulas in Nashville, they were just in the office at that point. Roy didn't have anything to do with the towns or booking or you know, or anything like that. But, you know, most of the kids were good workers. I mean,
a long time. And there were, you know, there were fans who didn't, you know, would know who Buckhouse Bunk was, or Bunkhouse Buck when he came into WCW, when Golden went in there, and it was just like, you know, it was kind of amazing, you know, just seeing, you know, I was a little kid seeing Arn Anderson and he together, you know, in Alabama, and then, you know, to see them together in WCW, and again, having Robert Parker around, or, you know, Robert Fuller around, was, you know, it was pretty amazing. Again, the length of time that a lot of these guys went is really, again, also to their credit a lot, too. And again, you know, should mention again next week, too. Going to be on the show is
Jerry Stubbs.
Jerry Stubbs. So, and again, we want to talk to him for a while, so he's going to be on again next week, too. That was rescheduled from last week, so I did want to throw that in there. Should also mention, too, just because it happened yesterday, or at least earlier on today, Bobby Jagger's passed away. I know him best as a member of the Kansas Jayhawks. It was probably the first time I had really seen him, and then later on seeing him in the Pacific Northwest, and then mostly all Japan and in Puerto Rico, where a lot of people, you know, really as an announcer, for people that in the South that got those Puerto Rican TV shows especially, they would probably know him best from there. Passing around Sunday, Rich let me know it was. I just saw it today. Did you have any experience with Bobby Jaggers?
I don't remember which territories, but, yeah, I worked with Bobby some. In fact, he was supposed to have been at the reunion this weekend. And I remember a couple people saying, I wonder what happened to Jaggers. Nobody knew. I guess, I don't know if he'd taken sick at that time or what. But, yeah, he was supposed to have come to Nashville to the reunion this past weekend. And then I just saw what, saw that today, that he had passed away. Just 64 years old.
And it's, probably, again, unless you saw his stuff, if you only know him from watching 24/7 or something like that, and you didn't really get a chance to know him, I mean, it was, a lot of stuff. Southwest Championship Wrestling, when that broke national, he was down there wrestling. And again, the stuff in Puerto Rico, the TV, and in Japan too. I just saw a story from Dory Funk Jr. today. From the Funkin Conservatory website, where he told a story about Bobby Jaggers, and they were looking for a replacement partner for Ray Stevens, and it ended up being Bobby Jaggers, and Jaggers and Stevens as a tag team there was really incredible, and Jaggers had enough, wanted to go with the whole cowboy gimmick to the Zenith. So he went out there and, never being on a bull a day in his life, demanded that he ride a bull and was on the bull for 2 seconds, but got the publicity shot. And, that's the lengths he would go to, and, just being a crazy guy and a dedicated guy. So, our wishes to his family. And again, really an underrated guy, both on the microphone and in the ring.
Yeah, Bobby was a good promo guy, too. Yeah, he was a good worker, good solid hand.
Did you ever go to Puerto Rico at all, or were you ever offered to go down there?
I wrestled in Puerto Rico for the Tampa office.
Okay. Was that obviously?
What I did do. Well, we used to work over there. Work Lauderdale on Friday night, go down to Miami, catch a commercial flight to San Juan, work San Juan Saturday night, and catch flight back in on Sunday.
And were you off on Sunday, or where were you on Sunday?
Well, off, but we were traveling
okay.
to get home. But, yeah, we were we weren't wrestling, let's put it, but we weren't home either.
Well,
but, yeah, that's – now, later on, when Carlos was promoting Trinidad and Barbados, which are both English-speaking, I would go over, and we went to a small TV studio down at the other end of the island. I couldn't tell you where, but anyway, I get down there, either with one of his partners or his brother, and I do openings and wraparounds in English for the shows in Barbados and Trinidad, and then I would lay down voiceover tracks on the matches in English. And spend a day, sometimes a day and a half, getting that done, and I'd fly back home.
Oh, man. Did you ever get to see the beach at all in that time, or were you just in the box working?
I did. I'm trying to think. No, I've been to the beach over there, yeah. We go in early on Saturday morning, and then, we go to the beach Saturday afternoon some before the matches on Saturday night. So... Yeah, that's I never wrestled there for Carlos, but I worked for Carlos doing those TVs for Trinidad and Barbados.
Yeah, Jaggers being down there for so long, there were a lot of, the Funks obviously would always go down there, and they were legendary down there, and it just to be down there for that long. I remember he was always impressed by Bison Smith. I used to talk to him, wrestled for Noah, but wrestled a lot in Puerto Rico. And it was just amazing. It's like the amount of, as brutal as the fans are, and the legacy, the fans down there throwing batteries and rocks and bags of urine and stuff like that. It was a hell of a thing to endure that and be a heel and have to worry about still walking down the street getting beat up.
Well, when we were down there, it wasn't heel or babyface; it was gringo. Because I remember we were the first time I was ever over there. We were in the ballpark. And, they set the ring up like over home plate and just walked out there, to kind of, grab the ropes or feel how springy the ring was or wasn't. And coming back, one of the guys said, now when you get, I don't know, it was 10, 12 feet from the dugouts where, he went back under to the dressing rooms. He said, when you get about that far out, cover your head, duck and run. So why? Well, they throw batteries and bags of urine and this and that. And I said, well, I said, I'm a baby face. He said, you're a gringo. This is too much. So that was the deal. But it was, you know, a passionate crowd. It was all promoted directly out of Tampa when I was over there to wrestle. That was 67. And then again, it's 70. Well, I don't know, though. I think it's 71. By 71, Carlos had it. But 67, we were over there. It was for Eddie Graham out of Tampa.
Huh. There's always that story of Jack Menino in the Dominican Republic. Because, you know, it's a lot like a Southeast Asia. You know, obviously there was the Reyes Flair title swap that I guess was done for the Ricards, I guess, were the ones who were able to facilitate that and hook up Reyes and Flair to do that. But it's, you know, the Dominican and the whole Caribbean section, just wrestling that's kind of lost to history.
That part of the world, they're very passionate about. In Nassau, we had an outdoor arena, right? And the walls around that outdoor arena had barbed wire and broken glass set in the top so people couldn't climb over.
And did they try anyway?
I'm sure somebody did, but that was it didn't take much to stir that crowd up. I mean, really, it was an easy house to work for a heel, which is not always a good thing. But there were always passionate crowds, always.
Now, when it came to, got strung up here, CM Punk and Sheamus here, such an important match between champions that Punk gets the win clean apparently here, and they do it on main event as if this is a big setting, but. Also, when it came to Florida, too, and I guess the Fullers, and obviously you don't know about everybody's points and things like that, but was there a lot of swapping, I guess, because just when you kind of look back at the Fullers and where they actually were able to be, and was it trading? How did it work as far as guys going in, booking a promotion, and then taking a piece of the office? When they left, in the most part, did they trade those shares to the new promotion they were going to, or a little bit, how does that actually work?
Well, never being one of those people, I couldn't tell you exactly. But some of those, well, like for Tampa, they had a lot of guys that had small pieces. Matsuda, Sam Steamboat, Lester Welch had a piece of that. Buddy Fuller at one time, Duke Kiyomuka, Cowboy Luttrell, Eddie Graham. I don't know if Louis Tillette had a piece of that or not. But anyway, there were a lot of pieces around, brother. I know with a lot of that, Buddy and Lester swapped Buddy's piece of Tampa for Lester's Atlanta. I mean, I don't know if there's any cash other than that. It wasn't just probably an even swap. But anyway, that just went, I mean, it had nothing to do with either one of them wrestling because neither one of them were that much at that point in time. But, the guys in the office in Tampa at wrestled were taken care of, but they weren't shoved down anybody's throat. You know, Eddie didn't wrestle that much when I was there. Sam did, obviously, and he was a star. But it wasn't like you just knew that this guy was going to be on top because he happened to have a piece of the action, is my point, I guess. But, that wasn't uncommon, especially with some top guy that you wanted to entice or to hang on to. You know, to give him a little piece of the action on top, you know, some points on top of a salary or, you know, if the main event got 10% or 8% or whatever the hell it happened to be. So, usually it was just a handshake anyway. Mike. So, yeah, when they would leave the territory, for the most part, that broke the deal.
Now, were you ever interested in any of that stuff, or was it just more, were you happy, you know, did you ever care about anything like that, or ever want
to be
to
very to be very honest with you, Mac McMurray, who was a referee and worked, handled the ring and everything for Southeastern, we were both with Ron from the very beginning. And before the war broke out, we had made a deal to get each of us 10% of the business. But then the war broke out, and then that never flew.
Would that have been, 72?
No. That was 79.
Okay.
Yeah, 78, 79. Because the territory had... All that war did was kill the territory. I don't care what anybody tells you or whatever you've read or heard, that's exactly all it did. It was killed it, period. It wasn't like one company ended up on top, because that never was the case. It just killed the territory. Had that not have happened, I'm going to venture. Well, see, Ronald had bought Mobile, and the idea was to swap guys back and forth, you know, so you didn't wear them out one place or the other, and it wasn't that big a deal. To run between K-Town and Pensacola was like 500 miles. But, I mean, it wasn't like you'd just do it, you know, one night for one shot. But, I mean, talking about maybe bringing guys, you know, from one territory to the other for extended period of time. And you could, that way you always knew, you know, that you had somebody to switch in and out if you wanted to. And with that concept and how they got the Mobile territory up and running, had the thing not happened in Knoxville, you know, I'm going to say, you know, it could have gone on into the mid-'80s and, you know, maybe a little, because it was, I mean, it was red-hot territory. You're home every night. Guys were making good money. We had a waiting list for people to come in. And, you know, for that period of time, it's some of the best damn guys in the business were in that territory. But it was ideal, like you say, because you drew well and you were home every night. You know,
let me ask you a question that way, too, because of that prolonged war with Poffo. You know, obviously, you can't have a crystal ball and wonder what could have happened, but obviously they sold. Always had a good relationship with Jim Crockett, but sold Knoxville to Crockett. And obviously Crockett, you know, with the moves that he made in bringing in Dusty Rhodes.
No, Fuller sold Knoxville to Barnett.
Okay.
And Barnett sold it to Crockett.
Okay. So was that a time where they were airing secondary Georgia TV, I guess, in Knoxville? Was that
that was the other idea, because of the proximity, was to move guys back and forth between the two territories. But by that point, the damage had been done. And it was just, you know, it wasn't drawn. It was sluggish. And, you know, they brought some good guys up from Atlanta. And then I left and went to Pensacola. And then when Crockett and Mulligan and Flair bought it, Flair called me and said, BIR said that if, you know, if you would come back and handle the TV like you did with them in the past, that we could work out the same deal. So we'd like you to come back. And I was, you know, happy to go back anyway, because I always liked K-Town. It was a good town for me. So anyway, then I went back in for them, and they didn't make it work through no fault of anybody. It's just, you know, that it had been hurt. So anyway, that was the deal. And then it was, I guess, some little fly-by-nighters ran in every once in a while, but until Corny started Smokey, you know, it was pretty much dormant.
You think they could have been a hell of a thorn if the Poffo thing never happened? What kind of thorn do you think they would have been in Crockett's side? And obviously, the moves made in the 80s, and obviously, you know, Bill Watts ended up getting TV when Vince McMahon took over Georgia, and they gave Anderson the...
Considering hindsight, obviously, but I think had Jimmy stayed in the southeastern part of the United States, he'd have been okay. For a lot longer than he was. Let's put it that way. Plus, he wouldn't have extended himself. They were getting ready to start a third production television production unit, and how I know that is because he called me here and asked me if I'd be interested in heading up that unit, and I said I would. And we talked for a while, and he said, well, when we're ready to go with this thing, I'll get back to you. And they were going to base that, I think, out of Nashville. But anyway, that would have been the third television production unit that they would be putting out. But that was the plans, which never materialized.
What year would that have been?
Oh, my God. I'm not sure, Mike. I moved back here in 85. And I was here. I'm not sure, 86, maybe 87. I don't remember.
Well, I tell you, that would work around the time, too, where they were, I don't know, there always seemed to be a lot, there were a lot of Memphis guys that were kind of making their way in at that time. And I know part of it had to do with, Bill Dundee and things like that. He came in, and Jaggers, and man, there were a surprising number of guys that actually floated through, at least on TV in that time, too.
Yeah. Well, when I say Crockett stayed in the Southeastern fans, at one time, and I wasn't there for this, but I know what happened. Fuller ran Boutwell Auditorium in Birmingham on Mondays. And anyway, when Vince was spreading his wings initially, they went to Birmingham in a new building, which I believe is just like across the street, across and down the street a little bit from Boutwell. And they ran Heads Up, and Southeastern outdrew them.
That was the biggest problem with WWF, and that was all over the South, Oklahoma City, Charlotte,
Yeah, for a long time. That's what I'm saying. And again, eventually probably Crockett would have had to throw it in the towel. But I think he would have lasted a lot longer with a lot less loss had he just tried to stay in the Southeast.
That's true, because they were the last ones to leave. And again, people wonder where fans went. It's always easy to point. You point back to the Monday Night era. And the one thing is that even if they didn't like it, there were old NWA Crockett fans. They were old school fans from the South that held on, that remembered. And even if they didn't like it, they stayed on watching. And when WCW died, so did those wrestling fans. They never decided to turn back. And you can't get them back at this point. You can always try to draw them in, lure one in once in a while by doing, retro stuff. But they were the last ones to leave. They were the most loyal fans.
Well,
Memphis went on for 45 years.
I think, Mike, that there's a market, but it's not a market that you're going to draw 10,000 people, right? I mean, if you have the way of advertising it properly, if you have, your package put together, I'm guessing you could, run occasionally and I'm not sure how you check your markets, but, where you could draw 800, 900, maybe 1,000 people, once in a while. But it wouldn't be something that you could run weekly. I don't even think you could run something like that monthly. But I think there's a market if the people could the problem with it, if you've got a good product like that, is trying to make the general public aware of it because of the cost of advertising and so forth and so on. That's so insane that, it's just tough to get your name out there.
Yeah, I would think the same thing, too. And we've thought about this before, too. And driving south, and I live in Delaware, and I go into Virginia and North Carolina and, places like that, and through small towns and through farming towns and fishing towns and things like that. And, it's like, damn, because the basics are always the basics, this stuff can still work. Now, obviously, on a smaller scale, and, Bo James, proves this where he's at. I mean, you're not going to get 50,000 people, but if you get a loyal base watching and you get people invested and having a good time and going,
sure.
it's still possible to do. It really is.
Yeah, I think
now,
so.
And unless it's pretty much at the end here, and again, next week, Mr. Olympia is going to be, and I'm really happy about this, too, because it was still in the Pacific a couple weeks ago, too. I was watching a lot of Jerry Stubbs just randomly, just because I really liked this stuff with Arn Anderson. I was watching some old Junkyard Dog stuff. I just went back to that in Mid-South after reading Gray Klein's book. So, again, incredibly underrated talent. I'm looking really forward to talking to him next week. I'm not sure what the guys have tomorrow night on Beach Day Pandemonium. Mike Norris, Bobby Simmons, and Jerry Oates. But if they don't have anything going on, at least check out a replay of the show. But I'm not 100% sure. The average day of a wrestler in the territory system. Rich just let me know. So be interesting to hear that. And Les, what you got going on?
Okay, Saturday, Sunday, October 13th and 14th, Blue Ridge, Georgia, at the NWA Deep South Championship Wrestling Arena. For more information or to sign up, you can email dscwrestling@yahoo.com or call Woody, that's the promoter, at 706-889-1803. And then Saturday and Sunday, November 24th, 25th, that's the Saturday and Sunday after Thanksgiving, will be at Waynesville, North Carolina, at Smoky Mountain Championship Wrestling Arena. And for info or sign up, you can email kcthunder@gmail.com or call KC at 828-707-4548. And that should cover it for a while there, Michael.
Okay. People are going to be hearing me with Sunday with Brian Alvarez. That is because I've been able to swindle Washington Redskins Atlanta Falcons tickets. I'm going to be wearing black inside the Washington Redskins FedEx Field, and hopefully I can get it on TV because I'm going to be holding up a sign that says, take that, Les Thatcher and RG3.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Watch out for RG3, baby. He can hurt you.
Really good. God, he is
when, that when, Matt, when Matty Ice can't win a playoff game, how can he be Matty Ice?
This changes this year.
Talk to me. Talk to me here, bud.
I hear enough Joe Flacco people. They get too many Ravens people around me too, beating me up. But I don't know who's going to be joining Brian. But damn it, it's not going to be me. Take my son to a football game, damn it. The way things should be on a Sunday in America.
The Athletics beat the Rangers tonight and won the division.
What 100 and whatever it was, basically 170 days in first place. Last game of the season, the Oakland Athletics blew a 5-1 lead. Texas did.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. real life is cooler than creative, right?
Oh God, it really is, and just the fact that right now, even though things are wrapped up, the Orioles are in play, the Giants are in play for home field. Everything's going on right now. So yeah, again, much like boxing and lots of other things, that out pro wrestling, baseball is doing it too. But also Tom Pritchard is going to be back in 2 weeks as well too. Do want to throw that in there as well? Dr. Tom coming back and joining us.
Well, all right, good. Excellent.
Yeah, say
look forward
to
talking to Jerry as well. Like I told you 2 weeks ago, Jerry was my next door neighbor when we lived in Pensacola.
Yes.
So.
And this is again. I was looking forward to this last week. Can't wait for it coming up this week here too. So, and by the way, Adam Summers and I are going to be doing a show if you're into the Japanese scene. Not only coming tomorrow night, we're going to preview the New Japan iPay-per-view, which is available to North Americans for the first time. But maybe doing a show on Monday too, wrapping that up because there'll be some good stuff on there too. So might as well throw that in there as well. So,
my God, you're a busy man. What can I say?
I'm just a whore for this stuff. But Les, for Rich Tate, for me, for everybody, we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, next week, Mike.
Yes, sir.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.